The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the Harvard Heart Letter and from the Harvard Health Letter. And the first article is from the Harvard Heart Letter. This is the August 2022 issue, and it's entitled, A Safer Way to Diagnose Coronary Artery Disease. Cardiac CT angiography, a non-invasive test to check for clogged heart arteries, is now considered a first-line option for people with suspected heart disease. Angiography, a technique that allows doctors to see the heart's arteries, can be done two ways. The first, called invasive coronary angiography, or ICA, has been used for more than half a century. It involves snaking a slender tube through a leg or arm artery up to the heart and injecting a special dye visible on an X-ray. Rare but occasionally serious complications can occur, including bleeding at the catheter insertion site or damage to the artery. The second, cardiac CT angiography, or CCTA, was developed 25 years ago. This test doesn't require a catheter. Rather, a special dye is injected into a vein in the arm or hand. Instead of the standard X-rays used in ICA, the new test uses a CT scanner, which takes multiple rapid X-rays that are merged together to create a detailed, three-dimensional view of the heart's arteries. In the United States, CCTA isn't as widely used as it is in many European countries, which have led the way in adopting this newer test. But that may change. Last year, expert guidelines from the American Heart Association and the American College of Cardiology recommended CCTA as a first test for certain people without known coronary disease who have stable angina. Angina, of course, is transient chest pain that occurs predictably during activity or emotional stress. CCTA is helpful for assessing people with chest pain who have an intermediate risk of coronary artery disease, meaning their chance of having or not having the disease is roughly equal, says cardiologist Dr. Joseph Loscalzo, who chairs the Department of Medicine at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. For people with a higher risk, ICA may make more sense than CCTA. That's because if the test reveals an artery severely narrowed by fatty plaque, the cardiologist can reopen the artery with a stent at the same time. For people with a lower risk, the guidelines recommend foregoing testing and instead focusing on making sure your weight, blood pressure, and cholesterol are under control. So who's considered to be at intermediate risk? An example would be a woman in her early 70s who is overweight and has elevated cholesterol and high blood pressure. If she starts noticing chest pain during exercise, CCTA is a fast, effective way to see if her coronary arteries are clear or if they have areas of potentially worrisome plaque. A recent study suggests that CCTA is less risky but just as effective as ICA. Dr. Loscalzo, who wrote an editorial about the study, notes that about 60% of ICA tests reveal no evidence of dangerous plaque. That means many people without significant heart disease are subjected to the low but real risk of complications from ICA. CCTA is a promising alternative, but it's not perfect. Sometimes arteries take funny turns that can either obscure a true blockage or suggest one that's not actually there. Just as technologies to diagnose heart disease have evolved, so has the typical heart attack. These days, fewer heart attacks result from big, bulky plaques that choke off heart arteries. Such often fatal events were more common decades ago, before a widespread use of drugs to treat high cholesterol and high blood pressure. Today, most heart attacks occur when plaques rupture and spew out chemicals that trigger artery narrowing clots. What we really need is a test that can tell whether you have one of these vulnerable plaques. That's been the holy grail in cardiology for many years. In the meantime, if you have stable angina and your doctor recommends ICA, ask if CCTA may be an alternative. Be aware that these tests aren't widely available except at major academic medical centers. And don't forget the time-honored strategy of focusing on healthy diet, regular exercise, stress management, and medications to lower your risk of coronary artery disease, says Dr. Localzo. Adjacent to this article is a brief article entitled Meal of the Month, Summer Supper on the Grill. A backyard barbecue offers yet another opportunity to add more vegetables to your evening meal. Instead of making meat the centerpiece, try grilling a variety of your favorite vegetables, like portobello mushroom caps, asparagus, green beans, scallions, red and yellow sweet peppers, eggplant, zucchini, red or white onions, and regular or sweet potatoes that have been microwaved a few minutes. The article goes on to say you should toss the vegetables with olive oil and place them on a hot grill. Grill with the lid closed until the vegetables are tender and lightly charred, between 5 and 10 minutes. Serve them warm or at room temperature with a sprinkle of salt and pepper. For a healthy dessert, try a simple recipe sent to the Heart Letter by subscriber Dave Winter. Place a peeled ripe banana in a small bowl. Mash with a fork until it's smooth, then add a little skim milk. Sprinkle with cinnamon, then freeze until solid, and enjoy any time. Now we're going to go on to another section of the Harvard Heart Letter. Again, this is the August 2022 issue, and this is entitled Ask the Doctor with Dr. Deepak L. Bhatt, MD, who's the editor-in-chief of the Harvard Heart Letter. The question is, what happens during electrical cardioversion? I have been having bad symptoms from my atrial fibrillation and am scheduled for an electrical cardioversion. It sounds risky. What does this procedure involve? And Dr. Bhatt responds, electrical cardioversion is a procedure to convert a rapid or irregular heartbeat back to normal rhythm. While the idea of shocking your heart with electricity sounds scary and potentially risky, this procedure is very safe. It's not the same as cardiac defibrillation, which is an emergency procedure that uses high-energy shocks. Electrical cardioversion more often uses low-energy shocks, and you're asleep during the brief period, so you shouldn't feel the shock. Atrial fibrillation causes blood to pool and stagnate in the heart's upper chambers, increasing the risk of blood clots. Because these clots can break loose and cause a stroke, most people with AFib take anti-clotting medications. Cardioversion can dislodge blood clots, and this elevated risk persists for about a month after the procedure. If you're not already taking an anti-clotting medication, you'll probably need to take one for 3 or 4 weeks before the procedure. That allows any existing blood clots to stabilize or resolve. Also, you could receive a special ultrasound test called transesophageal echocardiography, which involves placing a thin, flexible tube down your esophagus to get a closer view of your heart. If no blood clots are visible, An electrical cardioversion can be done without giving the anti-clotting pre-treatment regimen for weeks ahead of time. Before the cardioversion, you can't eat or drink for 8 to 12 hours. You'll receive medications through a vein in your arm to make you sleepy. Two palm-sized electrode patches or paddles will be placed on your right upper chest and your lower left chest. These areas will be shaved beforehand. Wires from the electrodes connect to a cardioversion machine. The electricity momentarily stuns the heart. When the heart wakes up, its internal pacemaker should take over and restore a regular, coordinated heartbeat. After you're sedated, the procedure takes only a few minutes, but you'll be monitored for a few hours afterwards. Cardioversion is successful about 90% of the time, but your heart may revert to an abnormal rhythm either shortly after the procedure or later on. It is especially likely to revert to an abnormal rhythm if you've had atrial fibrillation for many years. Your doctor may prescribe medication to keep your heart in a normal rhythm, and you'll need to continue taking anti-clotting medication for at least another month, or indefinitely, depending on your risk of stroke. The next article in the Harvard Heart Letter of August 2022 is entitled, "Too Little Sleep May Be Hard on Your Heart. Routinely sleeping less than 6 hours a night may worsen your blood pressure, your blood sugar, and other heart-related risks." Heart-friendly routines like exercising and eating vegetables take a bit of effort, but one healthy habit is fairly simple. Get at least 7 hours of sleep every night. About a third of Americans don't meet that goal, according to the CDC, and while some people struggle to fall asleep, many simply stay up too late, often binge-watching shows or surfing the internet, and end up chronically sleep-deprived. Most people aren't aware of the potential health consequences of consistently getting too little sleep, says Dr. Daniel Gottlieb, associate professor of medicine at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital and director of the Sleep Disorders Center at the VA Boston Healthcare System. One reason is that people believe they can function perfectly well on 6 or fewer hours of sleep. But even if you feel fine and accomplish all your daily obligations, the long-term effects of insufficient sleep can be harmful, especially for your cardiovascular system. Lack of sufficient sleep tends to disrupt hormones that control hunger and appetite, which often causes people to overindulge in high-fat, high-carbohydrate snacks. People who average less than 7 hours of sleep per night have higher rates of obesity compared with those who get adequate amounts of sleep, according to data from a nationwide health survey. Insufficient sleep also triggers physiologic and hormonal changes that increase blood pressure, blood sugar, and blood levels of substances that indicate inflammation, all of which can boost the risk of heart disease. In fact, habitually sleeping less than 6 hours a night was linked to a 20% higher incidence of heart attack, according to a study of September 10, 2019, in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology that relied on data from 500,000 people. And a study in the February 7, 2022 issue of Scientific Reports found that middle-aged people with a combination of sleep issues, including sleeping less than 6 hours per night, may have nearly 3 times the risk of heart disease. Prioritize a healthy sleep pattern. If you're not getting at least 7 hours of uninterrupted sleep most nights, take a close look at your daily habits to find areas for improvement. For most people, that means establishing an earlier bedtime routine, says Dr. Gottlieb. Keeping the same schedule, going to bed and waking up at the same time each day, also helps. One potentially helpful tool is a smartwatch or fitness band. Most include motion sensors that pair with sleep tracking apps to help you to regulate and track your sleep schedule. For example, sending a reminder to start winding down well before bedtime. If stressful events, mild depression, or anxiety are keeping you awake, consider cognitive behavioral therapy, which is safe and effective as a treatment for chronic insomnia. To find a therapist, check the Society for Behavioral Sleep Medicine at www.behavioralsleep.org and click Providers. That's www.behavioralsleep.org. Another option is an app called CBTI Coach, developed by the Department of Veterans Affairs. While it was designed for people suffering from insomnia and post-traumatic stress disorder, anybody can download it for free. Next to this article is a short section called Tips to Help Establish a Healthy Sleep Pattern. First, make your bedroom a sleep sanctuary. A sleeping space that's cool, dark, quiet, and comfortable can make it easier to fall asleep. Turn off all the electronic devices at least an hour before bedtime. This can help you avoid the temptation to keep watching or scrolling late into the evening. The blue light emitted by these devices may disrupt sleep. Avoid exercising within 2 hours of bedtime. Exercise can be stimulating. It also raises your body temperature, which can make it harder to fall asleep. Also, watch your caffeine and alcohol intake. Caffeine blocks a brain chemical that helps you fall asleep. Some people are more sensitive to caffeine than others, but a good rule of thumb is to avoid caffeinated drinks after midday. Alcohol's sedating effect may cause you to nod off more easily, but after you metabolize the alcohol, you're more likely to wake up and have trouble falling back asleep. Both caffeine and alcohol increase the need to get up to urinate at night. The next article from the Harvard Heart Letter is entitled, How a Fiber-Rich Diet Promotes Heart Health. Most Americans don't get enough fiber, which is plentiful in whole grains and other plants. Perhaps you're familiar with fiber's favorable effect on a person's digestive health. But this complex carbohydrate has long been linked to better heart health as well. Researchers are now beginning to gain a better understanding of the different mechanisms behind this benefit. Even early studies dating back to the 50s and 60s suggested there was something important about fiber for preventing heart disease, says Dr. Eric Rimm, a professor of epidemiology and nutrition at the Harvard T.H. Chan School for Public Health. Since then, findings from short-term clinical trials and many large long-term observational trials suggests that fiber-rich diets may reduce the risk of heart attack and stroke by as much as 30%. Other studies are now investigating how much and what type of fiber makes a difference. Fiber fights inflammation. One of the latest, published March 31, 2022, in JAMA Network Open, looked at fiber intake in 4,125 older adults who were part of the cardiovascular health study, which began in 1989 and followed participants until 2015. Researchers discovered that eating plenty of fiber, particularly from cereal grains, was linked to a lower level of inflammation. Even a 5-gram increase in daily fiber intake was tied to a significantly lower blood level of C-reactive protein. a byproduct of inflammation that tracks closely with heart attack risk. These benefits appear to be facilitated by the trillions of microbes that live in our intestines, which have been a focus of increased scrutiny over the past decade. Found mostly in plant foods, fiber is often characterized as soluble, which blends with water to form a gel-like substance, or insoluble, which passes through the gut largely unchanged. Some fiber, which is called fermentable or prebiotic fiber, gets broken down by bacteria in your colon to form short-chain fatty acids. These compounds then circulate through the bloodstream and interact with specific receptors on cells that quell inflammation. These fatty acids also appear to play a role in keeping blood sugar, blood pressure, and cholesterol levels in check, as well as helping to prevent harmful blood clotting. Most prebiotic fiber is soluble fiber, and good sources are whole grains like oats and barley. But dried beans, fruits, and vegetables also contain prebiotic fiber. Especially high amounts are found in raw garlic, onions, leeks, and asparagus. Everyone's microbiome is unique, complex, and diverse, so it's challenging to study. So far, there's no evidence that prebiotic fiber is clearly more helpful than other types, and most food contains more than one type. Insoluble fiber has other advantages that may contribute to heart health. Food full of insoluble fiber, like wheat bran, almonds, cauliflower, and berries, take longer to eat and digest, and so they're more filling than a similar amount of low-fiber food. His favorite fiber-rich meal, a peanut butter and jelly sandwich on dense, chewy, whole grain bread. For inspiration for adding more fiber to your diet, see the sample menu, which features a variety of fiber-rich foods. For example, on the sample menu, a lunch that is recommended consists of 4 ounces of canned tuna, a half a can of white beans, 1 cup of romaine lettuce, 1 cup of spinach, 1/2 cup of chopped tomato, 1/2 cup chopped cucumber, and vinaigrette dressing served on a whole wheat pita. Now I'm going to talk about research we're watching. Again, from the Harvard Heart Letter of August 2022. Preventing repeat heart attacks, Mediterranean versus low-fat diet. For people with heart disease, a Mediterranean diet prevents future heart problems better than a low-fat diet, according to a study in the May 14, 2022 issue of The Lancet. For the study, Spanish researchers recruited 1,002 people aged 20 to 75 who had coronary artery disease. Half were randomly assigned to follow a low-fat diet, while the others followed a Mediterranean diet. They all met with a dietitian in person or by phone at least once a month. Both diets emphasized vegetables, fruits, whole grains, and legumes, as well as fish and poultry. But the Mediterranean diet featured more olive oil, nuts, and fatty fish, while the low-fat diet included more grains, potatoes, and legumes. After 7 years, those following the Mediterranean diet had significantly fewer heart attacks, strokes, and related problems than those following the low-fat diet. This long-running study provided the most extensive evidence to date about the cardiac benefits of a Mediterranean-style eating pattern, say the authors. The next section is called What's Driving Heart Attacks in Younger Adults? Growing number of people aged 55 and younger, especially women, are having heart attacks. but the underlying cause appears to differ somewhat by sex, according to a new study. Researchers analyzed data from 2,264 people aged 18 to 55 who were hospitalized for a heart attack, and 2,264 people matched by age, sex, and race who served as a control group. The investigators found that seven factors: diabetes, depression, high blood pressure, current smoking, family history of early heart attack, low household income, and high cholesterol accounted for 85% of the risk of first heart attack in men and women. But diabetes was linked to the greatest risk among women, while current smoking was the biggest factor for men. Low household income tracked with a higher risk in women, but not men, whereas high cholesterol and physical activity, make that physical inactivity, were linked to a higher risk in men, but not in women. The study was published in the May 3, 2022 JAMA Network Open. Finally, there's a brief section. Grief, fear, conflict, and other negative emotions can lead to an unusual type of heart attack called broken heart syndrome. A new study confirms that positive emotions can also trigger the problem, and this happy heart syndrome may be more prevalent among men. In rare cases, stress cardiomyopathy occurs with joyful events, a birthday party, a wedding, or the birth of a grandchild. And most of these cases were in men. Though more research is needed, short and long-term outcomes appeared similar, regardless of whether people had broken or happy heart syndrome. This report appeared in the May 2022 issue of JACC Heart Failure. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, NCReadingService.org. That's NCReadingService.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.